Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Catalonia. The independence campaign continues, focusing on what's changed in the year since the region's referendum. The one-year anniversary of Catalonia's independence referendum was marred by violence after separatists clashed with police in the streets of Barcelona. Approximately 200,000 pro-independence supporters marched throughout the regional capital, but some of them blocked roads and even railways, while others got completely out of control and started rioting. The most extreme elements among them even tried to storm the parliament because how furious they are that President Quim Torra is supposedly too soft on supporting their cause. The incumbent leader replaced former President Carles Puigdemont earlier this year after his predecessor fled the country to evade charges of rebellion, though the separatist icon is still a very vocal proponent of independence and even surreally projected himself as a hologram during a Catalonian rally once. Puigdemont has been able to operate with impunity because Belgium, where he's currently located, refuses to extradite him back to Spain. This in turn has led to a bizarre state of affairs. In real life, Catalonian independence is a fantasy because Madrid still controls the region, but it nevertheless continues to live on in virtual reality and on the internet. Sometimes the virtual becomes physical, however, such as during the recent one-year anniversary of the separatist referendum that wreaked havoc in Barcelona streets and showed that there are still plenty of diehard supporters of this cause. Even so, they're still not thought to represent the majority of Catalonia's inhabitants. The recent unrest in the region poses a very real risk for Spain as a whole because of the weakness of the minority-led socialist government that came to power earlier this year on the back of what some have described as a so-called soft coup against the conservatives. The Catalan question and other problems such as budgetary disagreements could lead to the central government's collapse and the holding of new elections, which would extend the period of instability that Spain's been plunged into in recent years. Gosh, folks, I gotta say, I mean, it just seems like yesterday when we were talking about the independence referendum last year, but a lot has changed since then, or has it? So we're going to speak to two guests from Spain who are going to tell us what, if anything, has changed and whether or not that's been in the positive or the negative direction. So the first person we're going to talk to today is Mr. Miquel Puertas. He's a teacher and blogger from Barcelona.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Miquel, the riotous violence took some observers off guard who had taken for granted the region's relative peace and stability that set in since the beginning of the year. So what were the participants trying to achieve, and why did some of them even attempt to storm the Catalan parliament?
Well, I think that we should understand the situation in Catalonia in the framework of the crisis that is enduring Spain. Spain, after the collapse of the Lehman Brothers 10 years ago in 2008, suffered a lot. And then during this period, there is, the Catalan oligarchy. The Catalan oligarchy that was sustaining the, is part of the Spanish, let's say, system somehow endured, also somehow lost power, no, in Spain, no, and then somehow many of the, especially the party, the ruling party, the PDeCAT is called it now, the party of Puigdemont, decided to go for other way, that is the independence. No, this party it was called Convergencia y Unión, and then this party was systemic. It means it was part of the Spanish establishment, let's say, all the time supporting the government. The socialists or conservative, it doesn't matter. The Convergencia Unión always were supporting the government and obtaining also, of course, resources and also obtaining power. No? Convergencia Unión or PDeCAT always have been ruling Catalonia. The thing is that the crisis, I don't know if you know the news, but there is a lot of corruption. In Spain, all the parties, all the political parties, all the unions, the trade unions also are involved. And then today, for instance, two of the former vice president of, it was the also the director of the International Monetary Fund, Federico de Rato, is going to go to jail for corruption. And the same, there is other, it's all the system, even the king, the family of the king is also corrupted. So we should understand the situation in Catalonia in this framework. It was a strange alliance between the PDeCAT, that is a conservative ruling party in Catalonia, with the so-called the independentists that were nationalists, mostly from the far left, let's say, like a CUP. The CUP is a far left independentist group, and then they created an alliance and they promoted this sort of process called the process towards the independence. Well, the thing is that this alliance, after the referendum and after all this year, this period, somehow is breaking apart. This more radical group decided to go ahead.
I see. Okay. So it sounds like what you're saying, Mikel, is that
misunderstood, because they think that the people that are supporting the PDeCAT, that many people still are supporting the PDeCAT, are going to support them. No?
Okay, so what you're basically saying, to summarize, is there is a lot of corruption in Catalonia, the region is very politically dysfunctional, and some radical members of this governing coalition inside the region splintered off because they were upset and they were making a big scene by attempting to storm the parliament. So I'm thankful you had described that, but now I'd like you to tell us more about the bizarre situation in the region in general, where, I mean, Catalonia is still under Madrid's control in real life, but its separatist cause lives on in holograms in the digital space. So how do you comment upon this, and how do you comment upon Puigdemont's continued self-imposed exile in Europe? I mean, will he ever come back? Does he have any influence on the ground? What's his deal?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the situation is very difficult to understand, no? I mean, it's quite surrealistic, I have to say, no? Because for understanding the situation here in Spain and in Catalonia, you have to understand, how it's working here, no? The politics here, no? And also the social forces that are involved in this struggle. No? The thing is that, yes, it's true. There is part of the former Catalan government that is in jail now. They are going to now will start the trial against them. They are facing 30 years prison for rebellion, accused of rebellion. There is part of all the former Catalan government that is in the outside. I mean, Puigdemont is living now in Belgium, in Waterloo, and there are other former Catalan, let's say, ministers, I mean, or regional ministers, that are also living abroad, I mean, in kind of exile, you know, because they cannot come back to Spain. Well, they have, of course, a lot of power. Puigdemont still is I consider him a leading figure, because the new President Torra is just simply a sort of puppet. It's a puppet controlled by Puigdemont. Puigdemont has a lot of power, no? Let's say, still, no? Mm-hmm. And then is somehow, there is another issue now, that the government in Spain, the former Conservative Party, collapsed, no? Because it was a sort of coup, institutional coup against the Conservative Party, because of corruption. A lot of ministers, many of them were corrupted, no? Now they are also facing, have been charged by the High Court of Justice. And then the thing is that this is the situation. The new government is leftist, the Socialist Party, but it's very weak without enough support in the parliament. They need the support of the deputies, the representative of other parties, like the far left or populist left Podemos, mm-hmm. no? That is there supporting the Socialist Party, and also the nationalists. The nationalists from Basque Country, and also the nationalists from Catalonia. Without the support of those parties, the ruling party now, Socialist Party, is not enough. They don't have enough deputies in the parliament, in the Spanish parliament, to go ahead. And it looks like it's going to be a new fresh elections, and the new government actually is not doing anything, because had not any without the support of the nationalists, or the Catalan nationalists, and probably without the support also of the Basque nationalists. The Basque nationalists, I don't know what they are going to do.
Mikel, thank you for putting the Catalan question into a very detailed context that brought attention to the region's corruption and dysfunctional governing coalition politics that triggered the latest violence during the referendum's anniversary. This is very insightful. Now we're going to switch over and hear what Mr. Enrique R. Acedo has to say. Enrique is a Spanish-based geopolitical observer from History to Leadership, and he's also a writer for Geopolitica.ru.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Enrique, from your perspective in Madrid, what if anything, changed in Catalonia over the past year since its separatist referendum was held? Did the region really stabilize like it seemed, or was this just an illusion and the root causes of political instability just went underground only to reemerge?
Well, the changes are embodied in more social tension because of actions and counteractions of separatist side and constitutional side, to brand them briefly. But I must mention again and again that current situation in which we live is purely a massive distraction created by political class, both from Madrid and Barcelona. Of course, this political charade continues as 1 year ago and as 8 years ago and more years back in the past. This charade has peaks of intensity because normal people cannot be continuously protesting on the streets. They must work to live. And meanwhile, politicians are politically living from this business of social tension. Thus, they are interested in maintaining this situation as much as possible in time. No solution, only tension and tension. And I think it's very important to remind that in 2008, President Zapatero, in an interview on Spanish TV, told that tension in the streets is very good for us. So I think all politicians has this phrase in their minds. Tension in the streets is very good for a political scenario.
Very unfortunate to hear that, but thank you for sharing that with us. I myself wasn't aware of that quote, but that is very revealing about some of the intentions of the various political actors in this case. So now, Enrique, if we talk about Torra and Sanchez's governments, both of them appear to be pretty unpopular right now with most of their constituents. So which of the two, if any, do you think will fall first as a full or a partial result of the latest unrest? And do you think that these two politicians' futures, Torres and Sanchez's, are intertwined in any way?
It's hard to foresee which government could fall first because each one of them has their own problems because of this political position and inner composition of their respective governments. But in short, Sanchez government is in minority on National Parliament of Spain, 84 deputies of 350 seats. Since June, have resigned two ministers of his government because of scandals related to fraud in taxes or irregularities in qualification of university, and other ministers has now similar scandals too. And the main test for Sanchez government is the gathering of political support for his next year's national budget. His partners, which gave him majority to cling to the Spanish presidency by a motion of censure, have their own political interests and they want more budgets for their own political projects. And in the other side, Torra's government is also in minority on regional parliament of Catalonia, 34 deputies of 155 seats. His partners in separatism also have different interests and strategies with respect to Torra's presidency and his party, the PDCAT. And the last events have shown that Torra is alone because his partners have taken distance from him and from his strategy about separatist process. Torra recently launched an ultimatum to President Sanchez for arranging a binding referendum for independence. But partners of Torra don't want an ultimatum like this, or on the opposite, want a total disconnection from Spain right now. In short, main political trouble of Sanchez is the national budget, and for Torra is the future situation about separatist process. Actually, these two political troubles are connected because Torra is conditioning the support of his party, National Parliament of Spain, and really Sanchez needs to repeat his support during motion of censure for passing a new national budget. But anyway, if there aren't new national budgets, we can continue next year with the budgets of present year, passed during presidency of Rajoy. So I think that viewing the intentions of President Sanchez, he's not very cared for new budgets. His real intention is to spend all of his term in office until 2020. If he cannot pass new budgets, probably he will continue his presidency. So I can say that worst political situation is for Torra. because the situation in Catalonia is tenser than in the other regions of Spain. And it seems that separatist leaders don't want to know how to deal with the separatist process. We must think that separatism was really a political weapon from regional elite of Catalonian liberals who used separatism for pressuring national government in order to obtain more powers and more funding for regional government of Catalonia from the central government of the state. But since 2050, situation seemed to be out of control and political charade turned out to social unrest.
Okay, Enrique, well, we only have 1 minute left, so I'm going to have to be real brief here and asking you what you think about what you think Sanchez's suspected soft coup against the conservatives and the Catalan question both say about the larger issues of Spain's administrative weaknesses and its compositive identity and whether you see any viable solutions for addressing these two issues. And we have about a minute left.
Being very briefly, I can say that in Spain, there is no identity problem. The problem of identity that we can see from outside or apparently, really, we must think that in Spain, after the constitution of 1978, it was created a new system of two political parties, two big national parties, more or less constitutional parties for all Spain, and other regional parties, some kind of nationalist separatist parties. And the national parties, the idea of Spain was, okay, the constitution is very good, and this is our frame and nothing more. But really, behind them, there was only private economic interests. And regional parties, these nationalist separatists, they have only economic interests. So they used the identitarian issue for as a veil for cover their economic interests.
I see.
Now we can see, especially in Catalonia, when the more hard is the identitarian attempt made by this regional economic elite, the more evident is the trap. They are not identitarian force, they are only economic liberal force. And they use the identitarian issue for covering their economic trap. And the administrative weakness is linked with this system of parties because at the stake there are only economic interests, nothing about to the welfare of people, only about to the welfare of economic interests of elite in politics. So
okay,
I think that everything is about economy, but the cover is identitarian issue.
Okay, Enrique, thank you so much for exposing this long-running political charade, as you put it, between the competing interest groups in Catalonia, which is focused solely on self-interested reasons that ultimately undermine the well-being of all Spaniards as a whole. Thanks for talking to us today.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what both Mikel and Enrique shared with us today, we can see that, of course, what's happening in Catalonia, it's not as simple as it seems. This isn't a situation of some long-oppressed people living under the jackboot of a fascist regime, as some people try to portray it as. This is actually a very complex situation where you have business politics and you also have other self-interested motivations that are guiding this independence movement, but it's succeeding to a certain extent, at least virtually, by manipulating people's emotions, by hiding behind these identity arguments. So I think that the larger trend here is that you have business interests that are being advanced through identity disguises, if you will, and this definitely deserves further examination in other programs and from other researchers. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Korepko. Thank you for listening and take care.